With the 20th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast. It's Sunday, October 11th, and we are taping this just hours before the Philadelphia Eagles host the New Orleans Saints at Lincoln Financial Field. I'm Chris McPherson, joined alongside by football aficionado, draft expert, all 22 savant, Fran Duffy. Fran, good morning to you.
Good morning, C-Mac. It's a, another game day. Another game day
indeed.
Sunday here.
Very much indeed. Were you there when Temple... Speaking of football at the link, Temple goes 5-0.
That's right.
Dominating win over Tulane, 41-14, if I'm correct.
Correct.
Were you there?
I was not. Unfortunately, my baby sister, Lauren, moved into her first house. So I was there to help her and her husband move. I was not there when they moved into their apartment last year. I was down at the trip in Arizona, so felt the need to make sure I was there for this one.
Fran, 1974.
I know.
1974 is the last time the Temple Owls started 5-0.
Yeah.
And you weren't there for it.
Wasn't there for it. My parents hadn't even met yet last time.
Oh, good question. No, mine did not either.
Yeah.
So,
I'll be there the next couple of games. So I'll definitely be there at Notre Dame.
Oh, everyone's going to be there for Notre Dame.
I'll be there I'm trying to make it for the rest of the games as well. So,
all right.
Great season so far.
Hopefully you don't jinx it.
Hey, they might be ranked ahead of Georgia when the day.
Ooh. Our room and the production room for all of our Eagle Network programming, there's just a little lobby that separates the two, so we don't know if Mark LeBlanc can hear us at this point. But nonetheless, let's get right into the action. Obviously, everyone's looking forward to this Eagles game today, but we're going to delve into some of the stuff that happened over the weekend in the college football landscape, and we're going to kick things off with Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
Fran, I know that you edit this pretty quickly. I don't know if you can get a drum roll in.
Probably not.
But we already have NFL draft projections, or at least a look at different needs,
yep,
for teams who have started the season either 1-3 or 0-4, and this comes courtesy of our good friend Lance Zierlein from NFL.com. And the Eagles are 1-3, just like the New Orleans Saints. So one of these two teams today will emerge with some hope, some good feelings about the rest of the season. And the other, it's going to be a long trip, whether
yes,
it's, you know, back to Philadelphia for the Eagles or
another long
back
week.
To New Orleans.
Another long week,
indeed. So unfortunately, even though the Eagles are 1-3, they're only at number 8. So even the bad start for the team, they still have the 8th draft pick. I mean, that's still not like, all right, you're going to get a bona fide playmaker there, like in the top 5 picks or something like that. Number 8. So hopefully Eagles will get this turned around. But here are his top 3 needs. He might as well just said offensive line.
Sure, right.
He went guard, offensive tackle, and pass rusher. And I would agree with the sentiment to this point in the season. Certainly the offensive line has been the scapegoat for the team's struggles overall. And pass rushers, and you know, one of those positions where, you know, you have Connor Barwin, you have Brandon Graham, you know, who's that third guy? I mean, they had to transition Vinnie Curry. Marcus Smith's not been able to get on the field.
Right, exactly.
That's more of like a down the line type situation for the Eagles, which in this exercise it's always good to do. You want to kind of look down the line when you're trying to build a football team. But going with those positions, Lance Zierlein offered some potential fits, and Fran, I kind of just want to go through the list and get your take on some of these guys. Starting with guard, he went with Landon Turner, Tar Heel from North Carolina.
Yeah, a guy that I know a lot of people are pretty high on. I have yet to watch him. One of the few seniors that are a big name that I have yet to watch yet, but he's got decent size, you know, for a guy that's going to play guard. I think he's got okay size, 6'4", 323 pounds, so he's got some girth to him. His uncle played in the NFL. He played at 315 a couple years ago, so he's continually put on weight. Like I said, I know that he's pretty highly regarded, so I'm excited to get into him and get excited to watch him a little bit.
All right, let's go to the Pac-12. Joshua Garnett is the other guard whom Zierlein has penciled in or has as a potential fit for the Eagles.
Right, and a guy that I know that my good friend Ross Tucker was pretty high on when he first watched him, and a guy that's pretty, pretty interesting. He's got some size to him. You know, I think I also want to do a little bit more work on Garnett, but we talked last week about some other guys as well that kind of fit mm-hmm. that mold a little bit, you know, the White Hairs and the Alexanders of the world, the Max Turks of USC. So this draft, I don't think, is short on offensive linemen in terms of especially guys that can shift inside to play guard. This is a pretty good group.
Which is that's a dangerous sentiment, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because then you get into, well, then you can just wait
right.
and get a guy. You got to get the guy who's going to fit.
Still got to get a guy.
Your system is going to, you know, fit well for you.
Absolutely.
Now, either of these guys, we're talking, I don't know what Zero Line's, you know, objective was with projecting guys at the number 8 spot or just guys who would be a fit overall.
Yeah. I don't think either
these
of those
are
guys
not top 10 guys
overall. Right.
Okay. That's what I want to just get out of the way there.
Yeah. I think that if you're talking, you know, top 8, a guy that's going to play guard, I mean, maybe Ronnie Stanley. If you see Ronnie Stanley as a guy that can shift inside to play guard, I think he's got the body to be able to do it. But, you know, you probably want him at tackle.
Exactly.
When it's all said and done.
Speaking of tackles, all right, so let's go through some of the tackles. Vidal Alexander, LSU.
Yeah, and when I see Alexander, I kind of see him as more of a guard than a tackle. I mean, he's played both positions, shifted back outside to tackle this year, was a guard last year, played right next to Lyle Collins, who played left tackle. You know, good girth, has good contact power, you know, does a good job in the run game. Not the most athletic guy, so I think that'll be you know, the big question is whether or not he's got the feet to be able to stay at offensive tackle. So that's why I think I see him more as a guard. But regardless, I mean, you're getting a good run blocker, a guy that is smart, he's instinctive. The big thing with him will be the athleticism. So that will be interesting to watch there.
Let's go to the Big Ten. How about Ohio State's Taylor Decker?
Taylor Decker is interesting. You know, he's got really good size in terms of height. I mean, he's 6'7.5", he's 320 pounds. I'm interested to see, just looking at him, he doesn't look like he's got, and you know, we'll get into this over the next few months, doesn't look like he's got really long arms for a guy that's 6'7". So we'll see how that shakes out. But, you know, I think that a lot of people are really, really high on Decker. I'm not sold yet. Okay. You know, a guy that's got, I think that, again, he's got the size, but I didn't see the nastiness, that willingness to really just finish guys consistently into the dirt. I think there are areas where he can continue to improve. And really, the big thing with me was consistency. There would be times where, you know, he would get good movement, or he would be able to, you know, protect the edge. And then there were other times. I remember the game against Michigan State last year. It was literally like one series he'd look like a first-round pick. The next series he looked like a sixth-round pick. And, you know, going up against Shalique Calhoun and that defensive line there for the Spartans. So I think I want to see a little bit more consistency from him. I think that at times his eyes aren't exactly in the right place, and I think that he's got to use his hands better. So there are some areas where I think you want to see Decker clean up his game. But overall, I think he's a nice player.
We'll get to Calhoun in a second. How about from Baylor, Spencer Drongo?
Drongo, I think, is definitely a guard. You know, a guy that has been in the limelight here. I think a lot of people have been talking about Spencer Drongo for a few years now. He had that neck injury that cost him the season. I believe it was in 2013. But he's 6'5", 315 pounds. Another guy, when you look at him, you know, even though he's a left tackle in the Big 12, I think he's a guard at the next level. You know, and I think that his strengths really come when you look at his ability to anchor at the point of attack. You know, I think he's got the ability to drop his weight and hold up against a bull rush. I think he's pretty smart. I think he's a smart player, and he, you know, he plays with his head on a swivel. He handles the stunts and twists and blitzes and things like that pretty well. I just want to see him get stronger, and that was the big thing with me was, you know, while he's got the ability to drop his weight and handle a bull rush, I didn't see great movement at the point of attack in the run game. And, you know, I haven't watched him yet this year. This is all based off of what I saw from last season. But and I know that they've been able to run the ball a little bit better this year. Whether that's behind Drongo or not, we'll see. But that was an issue that I saw a year ago, was for a guy that, you know, people talk about what his reps are on the bench and how, you know, what he squats and things like that. I didn't see great movement at the point of attack.
Let's go to the pass rushers, and you already mentioned Calhoun. So is it a matter of when he goes against a guy like Decker from Ohio State, where it's just two of the best, and maybe Calhoun was getting the best of him on some series, but just talk about Calhoun's game and how he projects to the next level.
You know, I kind of, when I look at Calhoun, I see a guy like Chandler Jones, who was a first-round pick of New England. And Jones, good player, but is never a guy that you're looking at and like, okay, he's a dynamic mm-hmm. pass rusher that I got to stop. I like what Calhoun does, much like Decker. Actually, there are times where he's very up and down. You know, I saw the game against Oregon last year against Jake Fisher, and a lot of people that were fans of Jake Fisher pointed to and said, look at what he did against Shalik Calhoun. There are a lot of times where Calhoun looks like a first round pick, other times where, you know, not so much. He's been a big time playmaker for them for the past 3 years. He has good length. I think he's got a pretty good first step for that size. He's a tough kid. He's physical. You know, I want to see more consistency from him. But again, he's not going to be a guy that is going to be this dynamic edge rusher, double digit sack guy year in, year out. There's going to be seasons where he has 10 sacks, you know, I'm sure, if he reaches his potential, but he's not going to be that guy off the edge that you're going to have to fear week in, week out.
You mentioned Oregon. Did you see the tweet that Washington State sent out?
I did not.
It was a picture of the Oregon Trail video game saying that you have died of dysentery.
Oh, jeez.
Brilliant.
That's great.
It's like everybody's just dumping on Oregon because it's like, oh, you've gotten us for the last couple of years.
Well,
it's our chance.
This is our time. We got to take advantage.
Getting back to the pass rushers, let's go to the SEC. How about Jordan Jenkins out of Georgia?
You know, I like Jenkins. I like Leonard Floyd, who we talked about Floyd last week, who's a junior. I like Floyd a bit more, but Jenkins is interesting. He's 6'3", 250 pounds. He's got really good length. You can he's got really strong hands. You know, when he hits an offensive lineman, you can see him jar the guy on impact. You see just how heavy those hands are. He dropped a good amount of weight. He played at 270 at the end of 2013. Dropped 24 pounds before last year, and I think he's playing around the mid-250s right now. He's had a big year numbers-wise. I think he had 4 sacks or something along those lines against Vanderbilt. Interesting guy because he's versatile. You know, he shows the ability to play in a two-point. He play in a three-point stance. He lines up and down the line of scrimmage. He's got a good first step. He times the snap well, and I think he plays fast. You know, I want to see him take the next step as a pass rusher in terms of his hand use and knowing when to execute different moves. You know, can he counter once he's initially blocked, things like that. He's a three-year captain. So, I mean, that'll go a long way towards, you know, how coaches look at him once they become part of the process. But, again, really heavy-handed kid. I think he's got the ability to hold up in the run game pretty well because, you know, he's got some good size to him. I like his position versatility. I think he's a decent athlete. I wouldn't say he's a great athlete. He's definitely not. When we saw Leonard Floyd yesterday, I think it was an 86-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown and just what he looked like in the open field. He's not that kind of athlete, but, you know, not a stiff either. I like Jenkins. I wouldn't say that he's a first-round pick.
The last guy on this list from Lance Zierlein of NFL.com, it's Baylor Sean Oakman, who's someone who I can imagine being a polarizing prospect coming into this upcoming draft. He was someone who could have come out last year, chose to come back to Baylor, and it seems like he's a type of guy who physically is going to have all the tools in the world and is going to make scouts drool.
He's going to rip up the combine.
But is going to be, from a production standpoint, the guy that's like, is he ever going to be able to put all the tools together?
Right, and we mentioned it earlier with Decker and with Calhoun, over one snap he looks like, oh my gosh, he's a top five pick. This kid, I remember last year, I believe it was against in the bowl game against Michigan State, and he went up against Jack Conklin, who's one of the best offensive linemen, especially from the junior class in the country. Once where he just destroyed, you know, blew off the ball, one with a hand swipe, turned the corner at 260 pounds, 6'7", was able to dip his shoulder, turn the corner, accelerate running the hoop, and finished on the sack on Connor Cook. And then next you see him get blocked by a tight end. You know, I mean, it's kind of frustrating when you look at him, but he's got outstanding size. He's got outstanding length. He's actually from the Philadelphia area. He's from Lansdowne, PA. I have a funny story about when he was being recruited out of high school, but ended up going to Penn State, transferred out. He had some issues there, ended up transferring, ended up at Baylor. But, I mean, the just a physical, physical freak. The question is his consistency and what kind of player will he end up being. You know, a guy that when I watch him, he kind of reminds me a little bit of a Michael Johnson of the Cincinnati Bengals. Okay. I thought they had some similar strengths and weaknesses coming out. Johnson coming out of Georgia Tech, I think, was looked at in the same vein where, you know, he still was unrefined as a pass rusher, but shows those quality traits that could lead him to being an impact NFL player at times. But then you look at Johnson, and Johnson's been pretty inconsistent too. I mean, he had a couple good years in Cincinnati, signed that huge free agent deal with the Tampa Bay Bucks, and was cut after 1 year, and now he's back with the Bengals. So, you know, who knows what will happen with Oakman. But that's going to be the question. Is you have this guy who's an Adonis in the weight room, and you look at him and he takes his shirt off and everyone swoons. But you know, what is he going to be on the football field?
So the pride of Penwood High School.
Yes,
you mentioned Lansdowne, PA, just outside of Philadelphia, stone's throw from where I live in Drexel Hill. In fact, what's the story between Temple trying to recruit him? I'm assuming it's a Temple recruiting.
Oh yeah, so we were recruiting him pretty hard. You know, we thought we would have a shot at him. And Penn State had offered, and this was before, obviously, this past year when we did beat Penn State. You know, we were in on him pretty hard, and the one, it was during the off season, during recruiting season. Myself and a couple of the other assistant coaches, a couple of the other grad assistants got called in. We had to put together what was called a closing packet. That was our final pitch to a guy. And I was in charge of putting those together. All the different, it's basically a packet of, hey, Sean, this is why you should come to Temple. This is what we can offer you from a football, academics, you know, all the different things, all the different kinds of support.
And was it tailored specifically to each guy?
Oh, okay. Yeah. You know, we would do Photoshop jobs and things like that to just kind of, you know, it's all kind of, it was great stuff. But it takes a while to put it all together. So it was a full day's work. We finished the day's work. It was probably around, 6:30, 7 at night. Go online. First news I see from Philly.com. Sean Oakman from commits to Penn State.
Yeah.
So it was like, thanks, Sean.
Could you have just done it, 12 hours earlier, save me a day of work,
But yeah, no, I mean, the kid's a phenomenal athlete, so we'll see what happens with him.
So I guess looking back at these guys that Zierlein put together, do they all fit the Eagles? It's not just, Zierlein's smart guy, great football mind, knows the Eagles pretty well. Do these guys fit what the Eagles do?
I think that, and it's tough to say because we talked about it last week and we talked about it a lot in the spring with the offensive line
prospects. Yes. What do they really want?
And I think that right now, really the one thing they want is consistency. So you'll take that any way you can get it. But perfect world, pie in the sky kind of deal. Of course, you want a guy who's big and can get moving at the point of attack and is able to get out in the move and do some things in the space.
Of course.
But that will be interesting to see with these guys. And again, like I said, it's a good group overall. There's a wide variety of skill sets, so they'll have some options there.
Let's look at your matchup from your Saturday scouting column. And first and foremost, it seems like the media is already trying to find that quarterback to latch onto for the draft process because that's what's going to sell the draft.
Yep.
Of course. Whether it was Johnny Manziel a couple years ago. Last year it was gift wrapped with Winston against Mariota. 2013, he didn't really have that guy. That was the Lane Johnson draft. That was the, Luke Jokel and Eric Fisher going at the top of the board, Deion Jordan. It wasn't a sexy draft, so to speak, and production-wise, it actually hasn't been all that great. So it seems like that right now the experts are trying to latch on who could be that quarterback. We talked a lot about Trevon Boykin from TCU last week. Jared Goff seems to be the flavor of the week, so to speak, and he goes against Utah, number 5 in the nation, Eric Rowe's former team, undefeated, and Goff had what he called probably the worst performance of his career. 5 interceptions.
Yep.
In a loss to the Utes.
Yeah, and I'll be excited to go back and really, really study that game. But I wrote for that piece that it was going to be the toughest defense that he'd faced all year. 4 of those 5 picks, if I'm not mistaken, were tipped. Were tipped balls. A couple of them went off receivers' hands. One was tipped at the line of scrimmage. So, the one for sure was what I would say would probably be on Goff, where he was trying to be aggressive, which is fine. And I'm okay with those kind of interceptions too. He was trying to be aggressive there, and the defender just stepped in front. But I like Goff. I'm not ready to anoint him as a true surefire number 1 overall pick yet.
Of course.
But I think he's got some interesting tools. I think he's really developed as his career has gone on. From what I saw in limited exposure as a true freshman, I watched, I believe, 4 or 5 games from last year, and I've watched a couple games from this year, and he has gotten incrementally better each year, especially in some key areas, in pocket movement and ball placement and things like that. I think that he's got a solid arm. A lot of people really think he's got a cannon. I wouldn't put him up on the same scale as a Hackenberg or a Cardale Jones or anybody like that. I think he's got a stronger arm than Cody Kessler, who was across the way there at USC. And certainly he's got – I would say he's probably got a stronger arm than Connor Cook from Michigan State. It'll be interesting to see with Goff. I think, to me, he should stay in school. I would be surprised to see him come out. But look, he's getting a ton of buzz right now. And since there's not that guy in the senior
class,
it could be the right time for him to go. You know, a lot of people will tell him it could be the right time to go.
It's interesting that Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network, does his weekly feature where he polls five personnel executives. And all five, the question of the week was, what pro comparison would you make for Jared Goff? And all of them went with Matt Ryan.
Yeah, and then he said that two others responded, and those two others said
also
Matt
said
Ryan.
Matt Ryan.
So really, seven for seven.
To have a unanimous
which is interesting. There. You know, and it's interesting, too, because Matt Ryan was a straight, pro-style offense, under center, full back, heavy personnel. So this is, Goff's mostly in shotgun, a lot of short stuff, and there's, from what I saw last year, it's a screen-heavy team. I know they've opened it up a little bit this year in terms of the vertical pass game, and, he shows really good touch on those downfield throws. But slightly different offense, but, it's interesting. The comparisons, especially the quarterback position, player comparisons are tough.
Yeah. Start of the game, Devontae Booker, the running back for Utah. We talked about him last week a little bit. Had 222 yards, two touchdowns. I found this note from Josh Norris to be very interesting, that he'll be 24 before the start of training camp next year. What are your thoughts on age in the terms of the evaluation process? Does it vary by position, or is it just flat out it is what it is?
I think it is what it is. You know, and really with running backs, to me, it's not necessarily age as much as it is touches. How many times has he been hit? And that's especially true with the running back position. So I calculate those touches at the end of the season. Once his career is done, I'll take a look. If I'm not mistaken, I want to say that for running backs, actually I have the numbers right in front of me. If it's over 800, that's a lot. That's a lot of touches. So I would guess that Booker's probably going to be close to that, because he's been a pretty consistent contributor. For them over the past, obviously this past year, they're working him hard. He started 8 games for them last year, played in all 12, coming from the junior college ranks, where I know that he was kind of fed the rock there as well. So, he's going to have a lot of hits on him. And since he's such a physical runner, those hits pile up.
Your second Saturday scouting matchup featured Alex Collins, running back from Arkansas, going against Alabama's Reggie Ragland. And, Ragland by far got the better of this matchup.
He's such a stud.
27-14 win over the Hogs. 8 tackles, a sack, 2 quarterback hurries, and a forced fumble, while Collins was held to just, I believe it was 36 yards rushing.
Yep.
26 yards rushing, my apologies, on the day.
Yeah, and obviously when Collins, you're looking at that matchup, I'm just trying to pick a one-on-one.
Yeah.
Collins is really going up against that whole defensive front. And, we talked about A'shaun Robinson last week, mm-hmm. Jerron Rod, Darren Lake. They rotate guys up front as well there. Deshaun Hand and some of these other big-time recruits that play along the defensive line. Reuben Foster is the other linebacker there that plays full-time for Washington or for Alabama. Denzel Duvall, Josh Dillon. There's so many guys that play in that front seven that are quality players, especially at the collegiate level. But Collins is interesting. I thought that, watching the pair of him and Jonathan Williams last year, Williams the senior that hurt his foot in the preseason and is going to miss the year, unfortunately, I thought that Williams was the better back. I think Collins has a little bit more natural talent in terms of his burst and things of that nature. But, Collins is interesting. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Chris Ivory, and what he's done so far in his NFL career. Ragland, I went back and I watched that game against Georgia. He's such a stud. And a lot of people are really, really high on Miles Jack, and for good reason. I'm one of them. But I think the gap between a guy like Jack, who was the first person to declare for the draft as an underclassman and withdrew from UCLA this week, and Ragland is a lot tighter than people would think. And, obviously you throw guys like Jalen Smith into that group as well from Notre Dame. But Ragland, his ability to come downhill, take on offensive linemen. He can win with his hands. He's willing to stick his face into blocks. And I remember last year we talked about Vidal Alexander. Ragland tossed Alexander a couple times in that game against LSU last year, like took him on and shrugged him off and threw him to the ground and made a play on the football. And he's got unbelievable sideline to sideline speed. This year, just watching against Georgia, his instincts have gotten even better, especially against the pass. And that was a big thing. People question about what kind of player is he in coverage. And I didn't think it was from an athletic standpoint. I think some have questioned his athleticism. I don't think that's the issue. I think last year, sometimes his eyes were in the wrong place. He didn't always trust his technique. I'll tell you what, watching him against Georgia, he just destroyed Malcolm Mitchell on a drive route where he was in zone coverage. He read the route coming and just plastered him, dislodged the ball at the point of contact. His instincts have gotten better. Ragland is, to me, he's a first-round pick.
Interesting. Your former boss, Al Golden.
Yes.
And the Miami Hurricanes. The Saturday night showcase on ABC last night against Florida State, bringing back the rivalry, so to speak, and it was a good one. Florida State emerging with the victory 29-24. The Noles are now 5-0 on the season. Dalvin Cook, a true sophomore, 222 yards on 22 carries for 3 total touchdowns. Your matchup in this one was wide receiver Travis Rudolph, who had 3 catches for 38 yards for the Seminoles, going against Miami cornerback Tracy Howard.
Yeah, and Howard, they didn't match up every single snap because Howard plays to the field. He plays to the wide side of the field for Miami. But, Howard, I think he's a little bit underrated on the national scale right now, mainly because, the kid was a 5-star recruit, but hasn't really developed into, I think when he signed there, people thought he would be, there were different body types, but people thought he would be Jalen Ramsey. I mean, he was one of the top corners in the country, and certainly in the state of Florida, and he just hasn't panned out. But, he's a little bit undersized. He's 5'10". I want to say he's in the 190 range, 195 pounds. Actually, less than that. He's listed 183. So definitely on the undersized side. But he's got great quickness. I think he's got good instincts in terms of his man coverage and ability to read route breaks. And, I think he can hold up pretty well in man coverage. I think he's got pretty good ball skills. Some people have questioned his deep speed, and that will be tested here at the Combine next February. But I like Howard. I don't think he's a first-round pick. He may not even be a second-round pick. But I don't think he's going to last long on draft day because I think he's got good quickness. So Howard's an interesting guy.
What did you think of the kicker, Roberto Aguayo, going over to the Miami side and just going for his warm-up, and the Miami players were like, no, we're not having any of this, buddy.
Yeah, and then I think that they were getting a lot of flack for that on Twitter. There were a lot of kind of videos that went around kind of viral yesterday. There were some explosive press conferences. I know Randy Etzel had one. Dabo Swinney had one as well. There was some interesting moments in college football yesterday, to be sure.
Let's go to your next Saturday scouting matchup. Another Florida team, the Gators, remained undefeated, steamrolling the Missouri Tigers 21-3. Your matchup featured linebacker Antonio Morrison, who had 6 tackles on a day, going against Missouri offensive lineman Evan Bame, who was part of an offense that had just 257 total yards and struggled on third downs, going 1-14.
Yeah, and Morrison is a guy that you watch and you say, like, okay, this kid is pretty good. He flashes, and you're like, wow, he does some different things. He can play in coverage. He's physical downhill. He's really aggressive. I still, whenever I've watched him, I found myself wanting more. I'd like to see him finish more tackles. I think his instincts are kind of up and down. So Morrison's a guy, like I said, want to like him. He's had some off-field issues in the past, seems to have rebounded from them, and has kind of turned the corner there. So that's good for him and his stock moving forward. But, Evan Bame, he talked about Max Turk last week from USC. Bame was right up there with him in my mind, and they're very different players. Bame is 6'2", 320 pounds. He's bigger, and he's kind of built like a Travis Frederick from Dallas, okay. And just the ability to move people at the point of attack. He's one of these big time high school wrestlers, so knows how to use his hands and work leverage and work the upfield shoulder. I think that he does some really good things in the run game from that respect. Obviously, it didn't go well for them yesterday against a defensive front for Florida that has just been playing lights out so far this year, and that's a large part as to why they're undefeated. Is that
how did they turn that program around? What has Jim McElwain done? And is it just a matter of he has gotten the most out of Will Muschamp's talent? And
that's the thing. I mean, right now, he didn't leave the cupboard bare. You look at what Charlie Strong took over in Texas, and that was a bare cupboard. Mm-hmm. They haven't had guys drafted, at a record rate down there in Austin. And then you look at Florida and what Muschamp has been able to do in terms of that front seven, that defense in general, because it's not just the front seven. That secondary is loaded with talent as well. And I think it was just a matter of getting the offense back, getting them on track, because the talent had always been there defensively, and they had lost a lot of close games last year, a lot of games that they should have won. So instead of going, I believe they went 8-4. You win a couple of those, now you're 10-2. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that. You flip the script there, but You know, we talked about it in the spring when they hired McElwain. That was absolutely right hire. And the assistant coaches that he was able to bring in, you know, whether it was Nussmeier on the offensive side or Jeff Collins, he hired him away from Mississippi State on the defensive side. He put together a great staff, and that's really the most important thing for a head coach to do at the college level. And, you know, they're reaping the benefits of that now.
Our last Saturday scouting matchup, Fran's last Saturday scouting matchup, Tennessee, one of the more interesting teams to watch on a week-in and week-out basis.
Yeah.
There's always drama. There's always some kind of ridiculous storyline that's going to come out of the matchup. Rallying down from 21 to beat Georgia, 38-31.
Yeah.
A couple of very intriguing takeaways from this game. First, let's get to your matchup. Derek Barnett, the edge rusher for the Vols, going against the Georgia offensive tackle duo of John Theus and Colton Houston.
Yeah, and Barnett really burst on the scene as a true freshman last year. One with his motor. He's got good strength, good power for his size. You know, he has the ability to push tackles and close in on the pocket. And he had a sack yesterday, at least one. I may have missed another. I watched a good chunk of that game. I didn't see the entirety of it. But, you know, Barnett's an intriguing guy, and he was going up against a pair of senior offensive tackles. You know, I mentioned in the piece that Theus is probably, he's definitely more highly regarded than Houston. Houston, people may remember, was kind of the subject of a big story from the NCAA a couple years ago. You know, he was suspended for, you know, for a banned substance, you know, for something he had, you know, in terms of weight training. And then they found that it wasn't illegal. It was something, you know, the fault was elsewhere, but they still had to suspend him. Like it was something ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't give him his eligibility back. It was some kind of weird story like that. But Houston, I see as more of a guard. I think Theus will stick a tackle. I don't see either as a top flight pass protector, but they do some good things in the run game. So I was interested to see that matchup.
And then Nick Chubb,
yes,
star running back.
It's a shame.
Goes down for the foreseeable future. Yeah. I don't think there's been anything definite announced at this point other than it's a left knee injury.
Mark Richt said in his press conference that he was confident. I want to say it was, and this isn't verbatim, but
Think he'll need surgery.
Yeah, he said he was confident. He was optimistic he wouldn't need surgery. So I'll be interested to see what the injury is, if it's a hyperextension or, you know, I don't know.
MCL or something.
It was ugly looking, that's for sure.
Let's stick with the only other matchup involving top 25 teams yesterday outside of Utah and Cal, which we've already touched on. Northwestern just getting pasted by Michigan.
Yeah.
By a score of – the final score is 38-0. It was Michigan returned to opening kickoff for a touchdown, part of 21 first quarter points. Third straight shutout for Harbaugh's Wolverines. Any prospects of note while watching this matchup, Fran?
Well, here's the thing. They've got some senior linebackers that I don't think were incredibly highly regarded, but you know, you look at the James Rosses and the Desmond Morgans, guys that a lot of people viewed as maybe, you know, day three picks. I think they're getting good play out of that side of the ball. Mario Ojemudia from Michigan as well on that defensive front. He's a pass rusher. I think, you know, he's seeing a lot of playing time. And then really Jordan Lewis is really the guy that's getting a lot of love on the defensive side. He's a cornerback, a little bit undersized. I really want to study him, but the people at Pro Football Focus, the people that do all the analytics, I have been pointing to him as a big part of their success as a cornerback in terms of hit the passer rating against and things like that. And again, you know, I kind of you need some context there with that. So I'm excited to go back and get that context. But he is a junior, so I would imagine that chances are he will stay in school. So we'll see.
All right, that's going to do it for our draft buzz. Now it's time for Pick Six.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
All right, everyone, it's time for Pick Six. And the Eagles are getting set to take on the New Orleans Saints just a little bit later this afternoon. So in honor of one of the stars of the Philadelphia Eagles, not just on offense but on special teams as well, Darren Sproles, the Pick Six for this week has selected by our own Alex Smith, who will be jumping in a chair, rotating as a co-host on a regular basis in the very near future, who are six, you know, not prototypical size prospects fans should start to get to know ahead of the draft process.
And not just Sproles, but also Drew Brees on the other side.
Very true, yes.
Side quarterback. And,
yes.
So we'll start with that position. And that's Cody Kessler. We mentioned him a little bit earlier in the show. Cody Kessler from USC. Listed 6'1", 217 pounds, so definitely on the shorter side for the quarterback position. You know, I think that Kessler does a lot of things really, really well. You know, you watch him last year, and the accuracy and ball placement is definitely a strength, and really his ability to move within the pocket and work under pressure with bodies around him, because he was under pressure a lot last year. And you know, I think that Kessler, you have those two qualities, you're going to be able to stick in the league. Now, the question will be, what is his starting upside? Because his arm strength is not what you'd want, I would say, is probably fair to say. Now, the question will be, is it adequate? Is it something that you can play with, and you can, and he can, you know, maybe he's not winning games for you with his arm, but he can, you know, keep you in games with his arm? Is he Andy Dalton, Teddy Bridgewater? You know, where is it? Or is it, yeah, you're not going to be able to play this kid. He's not going to be able to make every single throw you want. So that is what it's going to come down to. I think he shows good toughness. Again, some of those innate qualities in terms of, you know, working within the pocket, you know, with bodies around him. He kind of has that that eye in the back of his head and the ability to avoid pressure. But that will be the big question, is can the undersized quarterback from USC, can he turn into a starting quarterback at the next level?
When you say undersized, what are we looking at here?
Like I said, I think he's probably in that 6'1 range is what it looks like. Okay. And you know, if you get under 6'2, 6'3, people are now going to, you know, can he see over the offensive line? You know, all those different things. And then also, those guys that are shorter, for the most part, and Breeze kind of breaks the trend there because he's got such a strong lower body. You know, are they going to be able to stretch the field? You know, can they get the ball vertical? And that'll be the question there with Kessler. So, you know, moving on to the running back position, and a guy that I actually just watched for the first time recently, because he's been pretty productive for the Texas Tech Red Raiders, and that's DeAndre Washington, who's 5'8", 200 pounds, so smaller guy, and that's going to affect whether or not he's going to be a starter at the next level. But I think he's got pretty good vision in a zone scheme. And that's pretty much all they run down there at Texas Tech. You see inside zone, you see split zone. He does a good job in terms of reading his blocks, being able to set up defenders. His athleticism is very, very good. You know, he's got great quickness. He's got a great burst. He's got springs for legs and the ability to just jump cut and get himself out of trouble. When he's one-on-one with a defender, he's making guys miss consistently. I watched his game against TCU, and he made safeties and linebackers look bad pretty consistently throughout that game. Really competitive kid. You know, he shows the ability to run between the tackles. He'll be asked to pass protect often, and he shows the willingness to do it, which is a good starting point. I think he's got a ways to go in terms of his technique, and obviously the size doesn't help. But again, a really competitive kid, earns every yard he gets. He's used out of the backfield as a receiver as well. So I like what I saw from Washington, and I think he's got the ability to be a change of pace guy at the next level. The question will be, you know, how much can he handle at 5'8", 200 pounds? But a really interesting guy to watch. And go ahead.
At least he's 200 pounds.
True.
Good weight is a decent sign.
Decent. It's not outstanding.
For his height, that's pretty
sure,
good. Typically, you're getting the 5'8 guys. You're getting the, you know, 190s, maybe even less than that. And that's where it's very dangerous. So
no
obviously
question.
The height's not going to be ideal. The size overall, not perfect. But still, at least it's not a lean guy. I don't know if he's going to be a foundation back for you. But
sure. And that's when you look at the same thing here with Russell Hansborough from Mizzou. You know, he's 5'8", and he's 195, so you know, sub-200. But a guy that, when I watched him, you know, I thought that he showed really good vision, you know, and the ability to create yards for himself in the zone scheme where, you know, he was able to see holes immediately and hit it. And again, another competitive runner. And I think when you have a guy who's got good vision and he's competitive, he's going to get yards for you, and that's what you want. It's because it's the ability to take what the offensive line blocks for you and then add on to that. And I think if you've got that ability, as well as the ability to, you know, catch the ball out of the backfield and hold up in pass protection, you're going to stick in the league. I mean, barring other issues, you know, whether or not it's as a starter is a question. Now it just becomes, you know, are you going to become Booby Dixon from Buffalo? You know, are you going to become, Roy Helu? You know, and that's going to be the big question here. But Hansborough, I think, and he's had, I'm pretty sure he's had some injury issues this year from Mizzou. Has missed a game or two there, but, you know, played mostly one back sets, really decisive guy downhill. So I'm excited to dig even deeper here on Hansborough, because a lot of what I watched is from 2014, excited to dig more into 2015.
What's Amir Abdullah's size? Do you recall?
He was, I want to say he was 5'8" and a half, 5'9".
Okay.
You know, so definitely on the shorter side too. But
I'm trying to think of guys who have come out recently who have broken the trend.
Sure,
or at least
right. Yeah, I mean, that's I'm trying to remember exactly what Abdullah was. But, you know, he was definitely on that shorter side. You know, I want to say he was pretty close to what DeAndre Washington was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting watching Washington – you could see first time you watch, oh man, this kid's got juice in his legs. I mean, you know, right away you can see he's got that quickness, that acceleration. But impressive guy overall. So moving on here, the next guy, and he's probably the most talented guy on this list, the defensive lineman from Notre Dame, and that's Sheldon Day, who you know, is going to be a straight out three technique. I mean, that's what he's going to be. He's under 6'2". He's 6'1", 285 pounds for a defensive tackle. So he's on the lighter side. Doesn't have really, really long arms, so that's going to hurt him as well. That'll ding him for some teams. But if you want a guy who's got first-step quickness, can penetrate into opposing backfields quickly, fires off the ball, he's got good pad level, he shoots gaps really, really easily, has good movement, good athleticism, uses on stunts and twists and things like that. Another really high-motor guy, plays sideline to sideline. I want to see him get a little bit better with his hands. And, you know, I know he's a leader and the character is definitely there, so I just want to see him improve that technique. A lot of what I watched from him, again, is off that 2014 tape, so I'm excited to dig into him deeper here in 2015, see what improvements he's made at certain levels. But, again, a guy that can – he's not Aaron Donald, but you look at the skill set, that's what he wants to be, is that kind of a player where you're talking about a guy who can get into opposing backfields really quickly.
Did you watch the video the Monday Morning Quarterback did with Aaron Donald? It was a film study piece.
With Andy Benoit.
Yes,
I did not see.
Very good. Yeah, you get a chance to watch it. They're breaking down tape, and it's just what he can tell from an offensive lineman's alignment, from how wide their legs are spread apart,
right,
about how they're going to block, and how he's utilized on stunts. You were just talking about with Day, and how they utilize him in that regard. 5 minute video. It's a good one to watch. Just about the nuances. Just you realize it takes more than just, you know, extreme physical talent.
Absolutely.
And gifts to be able to succeed.
It was
very fascinating to watch. Yeah. And Donald just seems someone who like loves like those, the little aspects of the game where
he came off that way. When we talked to him at the Senior Bowl,
yeah,
you can tell he's just a very cerebral guy. So, I mean, guy's a heck of a player.
Yeah.
No question about it. So, you know, wrapping up, we've got two more guys. And one guy we talked about last week, and that's Eric Stryker, the linebacker from Oklahoma.
Yep.
We talked about how some people even see him as a safety because, you know, he's 6'2". I want to say he's 220 pounds. Plays as an edge rusher. You know, is he a weak side linebacker? Is he a strong side linebacker? Is he a safety? The athleticism is absolutely there. Technique, he wants to get a little bit better. The motor, I want to see definitely improve, you know, going into this year. So excited to dig deeper into that and see if that was the case. But, you know, those were the issues there with Stryker, again, who we talked about pretty extensively last week. And another guy, the corner from Minnesota, Brian Body Calhoun, who's 5'9", 190 pounds. All right, so he's a 5'9 corner. So you know right away that's going to be the big thing with him, is people are going to automatically slide him into the slot, and that's going to be the case. But, you know, when you watch Calhoun, his ability to play the ball in the air is outstanding. You know, he shows great hands, but then also just the way that he plays it in the air, his getting, you know, the proper body positioning, the instincts to be able to jump routes and when to go up and high point the football. You know, he made a number of interceptions a year ago and pass breakups last year where, you know, he just perfectly timed the ball where even though he's small, he's got the ability to play big. So really competitive kid. I think he's got good quickness. He's got the speed in the open field. Really, really impressive with him was just his ability to hang in man coverage and then be able to play the ball in the air. But the big question will be, at that size, what is he?
Jason Verrett, Chargers,
could be. Exactly. And then
a team who will utilize him, willing to utilize someone that size.
And he was a first rounder.
Yes,
right?
First round pick.
You know, I would be surprised if Body Calhoun went in the first round. But, you know, and again, he's listed 5'11". He's definitely not 5'11".
Yeah.
So I would imagine he'll be at the Senior Bowl. I'm excited to see what the final, you know, for sure measurements are.
All right. So that's pick six players who don't fit the, you know, what the NFL typically wants out of certain positions. And we'll see how that impacts a team like the Eagles, because the Eagles obviously have their, you know, the positional
their body
limits,
types.
The body types of what they want. And on that note, we're going to transition to the final segment of this edition of the Journey to Draft podcast. It's the Draft Mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the Draft Mailbag.
All right, so it's time for the Draft Mailbag. First one, it's a question I saw on Twitter yesterday while following the action of the day. And it came from, it really wasn't a question per se. It was Josh Norris from RotoWorld, great draft analyst. Was talking about the Corey Coleman bandwagon, the wide receiver for Baylor, who had 7 catches, 108 yards, 2 touchdowns. He said that, you know, by the end of the year, the bandwagon's going to be full. Everyone's going to be on it. When I see a player like this who everyone's kind of talk about and starting to hype up there, I just wanted to get your thoughts on him, even though I know we've talked a lot about the wide receiver position, where he'll stand there. What makes Corey Coleman a potential special prospect?
The numbers are going to be high, and the numbers are ridiculously high, especially at touchdowns. I mean, it's a big play offense.
Yeah.
Regardless of who steps in a quarterback, that consistently put up huge numbers in the pass game. So the numbers, that's absolutely
part of it. 66-7 over Kansas?
Something like that. And hey, I think he was the – I saw that ESPN put it out. He was the first receiver or only the second man in the last 10 years or something to put up as many touchdowns as he has in the first 5 games, something like that. Stedman Bailey from West Virginia was the other. You know, Coleman doesn't have great size. You know, he's listed 5'10", 185. So, you know, really what you're counting on him is his big play ability. And in his bio at Baylor, they say that he ran a 4.38. So, obviously, that's a great number for the 40-yard dash. They say that he jumps 132, which would be in the top 80% in the wide receiver position over the last 5 years at the combine. And they say that he jumps 45 in the vertical jump, so which would also, again, put him right in that mold. He's in the top 90% in the vertical. And what I'm saying is, over the receivers that have been drafted over the last 5 years, he would be in the 90th percentile in broad and vertical jumps. So
yeah.
Obviously, the numbers are very, very good from an athletic standpoint. They're very, very good from a production standpoint. I haven't studied Coleman yet. I've only watched him on TV, just seeing highlights. I would just say, as a precursor, that much like when I watch, running backs from certain schemes and just quarterbacks from certain schemes, you have to take it with a grain of salt because the coaches
penalize them to an extent.
Not
penalize, but
I just go in just being wary, and I don't want to jump in too heavy before I get into it. But I'll take a great example. When I went into watching Ezekiel Elliott, I was kind of like, okay, like I don't know. I know he had a lot of big plays and a lot of great runs, but I know it's a system where there's a lot of different things going on. They might be overcompensating for him to a point where, that's a lot of wide open running lanes. And he's outstanding. You know, Ezekiel Elliott is one of the two best running backs in college football. I would put him right there with Fournette. With Coleman, I don't know if that's the case. You know, I haven't been the biggest fan of a lot of Baylor receivers because I don't think a lot of them are great route runners. Now, this kid has got explosive ability. He doesn't have great size, but I'm excited to see, what does he look like as a route runner? What does he look like with his releases? Some of the other smaller things in terms – well, not really small, but just the nuance of the position. What is Coleman like there? So excited to dig deeper, but like I said, the production and the athletic numbers are eye-opening.
It's 4 verticals. Just everyone goes.
Everyone goes, and they line them up, and they line everybody up, and they force you to say, "Okay,
like
it's one on one. It's one on one." So and they do. It's a great system.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal system. But like I said, and that's the other thing. You look at Shaq Linwood, the running back from that team, who's put up good numbers this year.
Yeah.
I went in and I was like, I don't really know how I'm gonna, and I didn't like him at all. I watched Shaq Linwood last year, and I didn't like him at all. So. You just got to be careful with guys. I wasn't a big Terrence Williams guy, and he hasn't. I know he's put up fantasy numbers here and there, but I don't.
He hasn't
been
consistent.
He's not a guy that has really developed as a route runner. So that's.
And this is the time for him to shine with Dez Bryant being out, and he hasn't really stepped up. So.
Exactly.
So first question comes from Ethan Pappas on Twitter. Wants to know, and we talked a lot about the offensive lineman with the Lance Zierlein piece at the top of the show, but who is the most athletic offensive lineman who would fit the Eagles scheme?
In terms of pure athleticism, we talked about him last week, was Max Turk.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy who's just a freak is Laramie Tunsil from Ole Miss, who hasn't played a down yet this year. He's been because of the suspension from the NCAA as they continue reviewing that case. Everything I heard on Friday and Saturday was that they are very close to making a decision. I know that this coaching staff is kind of annoyed that they haven't made the decision yet because obviously this kid is a big-time player on the offensive line. He is unreal, great size, great athleticism, and then just the technique on top. I mean, he is so clean, just with his hands and with his feet. I mean, he is really, really good. One of the best tackles that I think I've ever watched. And just, it's a shame that he hasn't played. This is going to be interesting, though, because you talk about, we talked about the Chubb injury, and I got kind of got into it with some people on Twitter yesterday about this.
I was going to bring this up, actually. So yeah,
is the, you know, the whole, you know, should the sophomores be able to declare? And look, I think that the rule is the rule, number one, and it's the rule for a reason. There are a certain amount of players that, yeah, could they physically be able to, you know, could Leonard Fournette be playing in the NFL right now physically? Yes. Could Laremy Tunsil be playing in the NFL? Sure, probably. But so many of those, and we've seen so many in the last few years. How many times has the record for underclassmen been broken? And every year, the number of guys that don't even make it into don't get picked, don't end up on a 53, don't even make it onto a team in training camp. Like they're looking for work in the summer.
Yeah.
You know, so many bad decisions being made. So you'd hate to see even more bad decisions being made from that respect. And you know, and then people are saying, oh, well, you know, those guys get paid and these guys don't. It doesn't matter because at no time will college players ever get paid what they do in the NFL. So even if they get paid, $5,000 a year, you know, whatever the number would be,
it's still going to pale compared to
the millions that you're going to make in the NFL. So that discussion will always be there. So to me, it's two completely separate discussions. But Tunsil, he's outstanding, and he hasn't played a down. If he is suspended for the entire year and doesn't play a down because of this ordeal, and he still declares for the draft, he's going to be a top 10 pick, no question in my mind. He is unbelievable.
So that's
from an athleticism standpoint, I would put Tunsil right there.
Because I guess from what I've seen, what I've read, it seemed like Ronnie Stanley from Notre Dame would be probably the other tackle who would probably compete to be the first one off the board.
Right.
And Stanley's had his ups and downs this season to the point where Tunsil would probably, like I said,
I would take Tunsil off of over Stanley for
and
sure.
And he's probably benefiting from not playing.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
What do you think of Miles Jack?
The decision? I know Jim Moore came out and said, oh, he doesn't have enough tape. He's been a 2-year starter. He's started, I can go back and look at how many games he started over the past 2 years. He started 12 games in 2013 as a true freshman. He started 13 last year, and he started, four this year? So you're talking nearly 30 starts. There's enough tape. And people have said, I know I was talking with Russ Landy from Big Ten Network, another friend of the podcast. Best coverage linebacker he's ever seen, ever. Guy's a freak of an athlete, plays safety, plays in the slot over receivers, can run with receivers and break passes up downfield. The athleticism's off the charts, the instincts, the toughness, the ability. Now, is he going to be asked to do a lot of those things? It'll be really interesting to see what team he ends up going to and how they use him, how they deploy him, and things like that. I said last week I would take him every single day over Shaq Thompson, who was I think he was like 26 something. He was a late first-round pick. I would take Miles Jack over him every single day. Jack is going to be a first-round pick, no question in my mind. Torn meniscus, tricky rehab in terms of, hey, if it doesn't go well, then that can lead to long-term issues. But in no way is that the kind of thing that, as long as it's rehabbed correctly,
of course,
he'll be fine moving forward. He's not going to lose any of that athleticism.
He's looking at the combine, I believe, to be able to return to action.
And the quote was, I heard Mike Silver from NFL Network say, he doesn't want to just go to the combine and work out. His plan is to blow up, which he will, in terms of, if he's healthy, he would blow up the combine. His goal is to come off the injury and blow up the combine. So Jack is a ridiculous player.
It would have been interesting if Cardale Jones had declared for the draft.
Right.
After the amount of games he played.
And
lack of tape in situations. But.
I've heard people bring up, Antonio Cromartie and, how many starts did he have? We talked last year, how much tape was there on Jalen Collins? You can go on and on. Yeah. And there are lots of guys that have a lot less tape than Miles Jack that have been first-round picks.
And the last question of the day comes from Calvin Hall on Twitter, who simply wants to know, when are the Eagles going to win some games?
Yeah.
Hopefully starting today.
Hopefully we get it going.
So
it's going to be an interesting one.
Certainly. So, folks, I think that's going to do it for us here on the Journey to Draft podcast. Again, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you consume your podcasts. Make sure to rate and comment. Let us know what you want to hear on the program down the line. We're going to keep things rolling once a week until the draft season really begins in earnest with the college all-star games, East-West Shrine.
Hopefully we're not even down there.
Yes, hopefully we're not down there. But
if we are, we will have full coverage every single day.
Indeed, yes. So for Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. You've been listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.